Life, politics, parenting, and navigating the daily chaos. It's time for Politely Rude with Abby Johnson.
Well, hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Politely Rude with Abby Johnson. And thank you so much for joining us once again. And this week, I'm actually not in my office, so I'm sorry, I'm not using my usual audio podcast stuff. So if the audio is a little weird, I'm sorry about that. But I'm actually on a little vacation with my family, and we were out at a lake house, and we actually bought a boat this summer. We are now those people with a boat, and I think they say, you know, the best day of your life when you have a boat is the day you buy it and the day you sell it. And anyway, but we've had a good weekend, and so anyway, we're out here on this lake at this lake house with our boat, and we've had a good weekend with our children, and it's been great. So I don't know. We can probably use our boat in Texas until November, you know, the way it's hot here. But anyway, it's been a nice break because I've been just inundated with media, and because of the Texas Heartbeat Act that's gone into effect here. And so it's just been a nice break, just me and the family. But I'm excited to get back to it, and really excited about our guest today. You probably know her. You probably already follow her. I was first introduced to her on OANN. She was the host of Tipping Point. She now has her own awesome show, The Liz Wheeler Show. And she's just fantastic, super smart. And yeah, you want to follow her if you don't already. Liz, welcome to our show today. Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having me, Abby, and thanks for the glowing introduction. My goodness.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about this. Of course, you know, I'm in Texas. This I've talked about this a little bit on my show. Texas Heartbeat Act is now it's in effect. It's working. We're hearing from people on the sidewalks, you know, who are watching these abortion clinics. We're hearing that, for many of these abortion clinics, the parking lots are empty. We're hearing that these abortion clinics are calling patients, canceling appointments. Of course, the left, you know, they are in a frenzy. You would think that every woman in Texas is walking around pregnant and needing an abortion and not being able to get one. But I mean, what's your take on this? I mean, Hollywood especially has been just in hysterics. But I've been saying, you know, this is really the first time that these women are having to recognize that they may have to be responsible for their actions, that they can't just go around and have, you know, consequence-free sexual activity. And that's, I guess, a new concept for these women, that they may actually have to bear responsibility for their actions. So, I mean, what's been sort of your take on all of this that's been going on, and just all of the hysteria that's been coming from Hollywood, that's been coming from the elite, that's been coming from the media?
Yeah, well, I think, and this is something I thank God for every single day that this law stands, is that 150, at least 150 babies, unborn babies, lives are being saved every single day that this law is in effect. And that's just, I mean, that's so tremendous. If you think about 150 babies, that's what, 6 kindergarten classrooms full of little girls and boys who are being saved by this law every day, which is a huge blessing. Something that you said in your introduction really strikes me too. When you're talking about these abortion clinics with their empty parking lots, that's what makes this law so unique. That's what makes it such an interesting judicial experiment, if you will, because the reason that this law is standing is because of this very unique enforcement mechanism, the private right of action, right? That a private citizen can file a civil lawsuit against someone who has violated this prohibition on abortion. But the thing is, the reason that the judiciary hasn't overturned it, at least so far, at least thus far, is because abortion clinics aren't actually violating the law right now. They're complying because they fear what the enforcement would be. So we're not even seeing necessarily this inundation of private civil lawsuits. We're seeing abortion clinics that are canceling preemptively because they fear breaking the law and they fear facing these lawsuits. So it has been tried once before. This I don't know if you want to call it a legislative technique or an enforcement mechanism. It's been tried actually in Texas. I believe it was in the city of Lubbock. They did the same thing using this private right of action. And it made the one Planned Parenthood clinic in their city, it made them close down because they too feared these private lawsuits. They didn't really have to face them. They preemptively stopped. So I'm interested, I think as all pro-lifers who are interested in the legality of the thing, I'm interested in how long this stands. I'm interested in what the Supreme Court says. Abby, as you know, the Supreme Court is going to be reviewing essentially Roe v. Wade again this fall because of the Mississippi 15-week abortion ban. And I certainly hope that the Supreme Court comes down on the right side, which is the constitutional side, the moral side, the ethical side, the side of life, and overturns Roe v. Wade. As for Hollywood, I mean, I think Michelle Williams actually articulated Hollywood's view on life and abortion and the material success that they achieve through their art the best at the Golden Globes. This is, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. She held up her award and said, "I wouldn't have this if I had not exercised my right to choose as a woman." And when she said that, she was obviously referring to abortion, just in euphemistic language. But to me, I mean, it was very sad to hear her say that, but it was somewhat of a punch in the gut because I thought, my goodness, this young woman has been lied to so many times that even though she's tremendously wealthy, she has tremendous amount of resources around her. She was told that she could not achieve success in her career unless she sacrificed the life of her unborn child. And what she did ultimately is she sacrificed a soul, a human person for that shiny, brittle statue that she's holding up on the stage right now. And the idea that you would trade a human being for that kind of award is simply atrocious. But I think that her honesty, although she didn't intend it in this way, her honesty let us know what Hollywood's true view of human life is, and that they'd rather trade human beings for essentially money, which is blood money, if that's what it means for them to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, and in the end, for what? I mean, in the end, I mean, she was so, I mean, yeah, I mean, I remember that so clearly. And I thought, okay, you get a statue, right? But I mean, what does that mean? I mean, essentially it means nothing. I mean, but yeah.
I mean, what does it represent? Well, what does it represent?
Right. Exactly. It's just been interesting to, I think also it's been interesting to watch, for me, to watch all of these social media accounts like Alyssa Milano and even just all these like TikTok accounts and things. And these people have been putting out the fear mongering from the left and from these social media accounts has been just off the charts. I mean, and I guess it's just the way it is. I mean, they're not really interested in telling the truth. You know, I saw a graphic going around saying, oh, now, a dad can rape his 14-year-old daughter and then sue her for having an abortion. I'm like, it's not even true. It's not even true. The law doesn't even allow for a woman to be sued.
And that's so horrific. Well, that's so horrific. Right. And this is what I would say in response to that. I would say, first of all, that's horrific. And if that has ever actually happened, then we should obviously prosecute that. I don't even want to call him a father. We should prosecute that abuser, that sex abuser, to the fullest extent of the law. But in practicality, show me how many times that's happened when you're and compare that to the number of abortions that happened as a whole. Because you and I know, Abby, that if you're just looking at the data, it's less than 1% abortions that are for the reasons of rape, incest, or life of the mother. All three of those combined is less than 1% of abortions. So you can make hyperbolic, horrific arguments in favor of abortion, but when you actually when you fabricate those kind of stories, ultimately what it's going to do is it should convince the general public that you don't have a real argument. Because if you had a real argument, you wouldn't have to invent hyperbole. You'd be able to talk about the average case, the reason women typically have abortions the vast majority of the time, which is convenience, essentially. You should be able to make the argument on the grounds of what is actually happening, not a hyperbolic invention that never actually happened.
Well, exactly. And when you actually confront these people who are coming to you and saying, you know, well, what about in cases of rape? And if you concede that, if you say to them, okay, so, you know, let's say I give you that, which I never would. I don't believe in abortion for, you know, cases of rape. But, I'll say to them, okay, so let's say that I concede that. Okay, let's say that I give you that exception. Then will you agree to ban every other type of abortion? The answer is always no. Well, no, I believe in a woman's right. Okay, so then why do you keep bringing up the exceptions? I mean, you don't believe in banning abortion at all, but that's what they do. They try to play on emotion, and really, that's what I find the left to do always, is they're trying to bring up emotion. They don't want to deal in facts. They only want to deal in emotion, and it's really, that's why they're not able to have a dialogue anymore. You cannot dialogue with the left. You cannot dialogue with liberals in our country anymore. Because all they want to do is shut you down. All they want to do is whine and cry and then throw up personal insults, because they cannot have any sort of dialogue with you at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not just emotion. So emotion has its place. I mean, there's a proper place for emotion in a political dialogue, but what the Democrats do, or what the leftists do, or the pro-abortion activists, whatever you want to call them at this point, what they do is they bring up the horror. They exploit people's trauma. And that's even different than just using human emotion. They exploit people's trauma to try to push their own political agenda. They're essentially making women who have been raped, making them pawns in the pro-abortion lobby's political agenda. And that's beyond evil. I mean, these women have been victimized once already, and now the pro-abortion left is victimizing them again, telling them that their only option is abortion, and then exploiting their horrible stories to push the political agenda of the radical left, which of course is not safe, legal, and rare abortion. It is abortion that is celebrated without stigma at any point in the pregnancy, perhaps even, according to the governor of Virginia, after birth. And that, Abby, I think is why this idea of having a dialogue about abortion is a long lost thing, because at the beginning, and I don't give abortion activists the benefit of the doubt very often, but at the very beginning of legal abortion, there were a lot of Democrats who may have been elitists. They may have been removed from the abortion industry themselves, but they, you know, the Bill Clintons, for example, who said, oh, safe, legal, and rare. We don't want abortions to happen, but we have to put public policy in place to try to lower the numbers. I mean, that narrative from the left has been completely obliterated. The idea, even in Roe v. Wade, the idea that we don't know when life begins. So if we can't establish that, then who are we to make the judgment call? That's more of a religious decision that can't be established by justices on the Supreme Court. That's been debunked. I mean, we know that life begins at conception. We know it's a human life from the moment the sperm fuses with the egg. We know then that abortion is ending that human life. The abortion industry tells us that there's nothing wrong with that. They tell us you shouldn't feel ashamed, that you shouldn't feel stigma, that you should hashtag shout your abortion. They say we don't need to lower abortion numbers, because if they even admitted that, they'd be admitting that there's something bad about abortion, which they won't do. So we've gotten to this point where their positions are so extreme, they fly in the face of everybody's common sense, morality, ethics, science, medicine, life, that they can't actually have a discussion because there's no corner for them to hide in. We would back them into the truth every single time. And so they just have chosen, instead of dialoguing, to engage, as I said, in this exploitation of people's trauma, and to refuse to acknowledge that the majority of Americans don't want unrestricted abortion.
Right. And well, no, they don't. And really what I think the sad thing too is that they are willing to, it's about access to abortion at all costs, even the cost of the woman's safety. So, you know, I mean, I agree with you. I think there were people, you know, like, you know, Bill Clinton, there were people sort of back in that time who I think they really did believe, you know, safe, legal, and rare. I think there were people who believed that. I met people, you know, I knew a woman who, you know, worked at Planned Parenthood in the 70s and early 80s. And she said, Abby, that's really what I believed. I mean, I really believe that's what Planned Parenthood was trying to do. And she ended up leaving because she started seeing the sort of this, I don't know, like morphing taking place within the organization. And she said, and I realized it was really just about the bottom line. But you know, I think there were people who really did believe that, and that's why they had gotten involved. And, but then it just became about access, access, access. And even if the woman dies, even if the woman has to have a hysterectomy because her uterus is perforated, even if the woman loses her fertility because she has an infection, it doesn't matter. It's just about access, just widespread access, no matter the cost to the woman. And we see that today. I mean, that's why Planned Parenthood is trying to push push these self-induced abortions now. That's why they're trying to push laws where it's not doctors that are providing abortions in many states. You know, now in many states, nurses are the ones providing abortions, overseeing abortions, actually providing the surgical abortions. It's not even doctors that are providing abortions, surgical abortions anymore. That is risky to the patient. We already have seen an increased risk of hysterectomy, of risk of infertility, risk of infection to these patients because they're not being seen by doctors. We already know that. But they don't care because it's just about widespread access to abortion. And these self-managed abortions that are being done at home, there's a website now that is up and ready and available to women. And I had heard about it. And so I went to the website and I asked if I could get the medication abortion regimen. I told them that I was in my ninth week of pregnancy. I lived in Texas. And I said, you know, can I get the abortion pill? And I signed up and did the, you know, quote unquote consult. Never talked to a physician. Never did anything like that. Everything was online, filled out a form, told them that I was 9 weeks and 4 days pregnant. They sent me back an email, said that they could send me the pills. All I would have to do is email them a picture of my ID. I did not have to submit an ultrasound proving that I was 9 weeks and 4 days. I just had to put in, you know, just some date of my last period. I mean, that could be, I could just pull that out of thin air, right? And they would, for $110, mail me the medication that would come from India. And by the way, it would take 4 weeks. So now I would be 14 weeks into my pregnancy.
That's so horrific.
Taking this medication abortion regimen at home. I would be delivering a baby, a 14-week-old baby, that's 3.5 months into my pregnancy at home. I could be alone. I mean, I could be an hour away from an emergency care center, from an ER. I could hemorrhage to death by the time I get to an ER. And Planned Parenthood, NARAL, the National Organization for Women, these organizations are pushing these websites. They are pushing this website for women to go and get this self-managed abortion care. And this is what they say is good for women. This is what is supposedly the best care for women. And I'm telling you right now, Liz, women are going to be dying from what they are pushing on women because of this self-managed abortion. It is sick. It is disgusting. And I cannot believe that they are so, and this is how you know it's demonic, because they are so hell-bent on killing babies that they are willing to sacrifice women in the process.
It's so horrific. I mean, it makes me sick to my stomach to hear about it. And thank God yours was a hypothetical story, just seeing exactly how the thing worked. I mean, you use the right word. It's demonic. It's satanic. And in a sense, we have to sit here and say, well, why are we surprised that the abortion industry is willing to sacrifice women? Why are we surprised that the abortion industry, Planned Parenthood, NARAL, all of these different places that push abortion on women, why are we surprised that they have a complete and utter disregard for the humanity of the woman when their business is literally run on a complete and utter disregard for the life, the body, the well-being, and the life of the unborn baby? I mean, in a sense, we shouldn't be surprised because they're just treating the woman the way that they treat the baby with utter disregard as long as they can profit from her. The other thing, Abby, I'm in the middle of reading the most fascinating book. It's called Takedown by Paul Kengor, and it's actually about Marxist and communist, the Marxist and communist takeover, essentially, of American academia. I know it's super nerdy, but I'm really into it right now. And it's extremely relevant to what's going on because Kengor has a chapter in his book about Margaret Sanger herself, the founder of Planned Parenthood, and about how tied in she was to the Soviet ideology at the time, which essentially obviously was Leninism, Marxism, socialism, communism, this disgusting hybrid, and how, you know, when she started the American Birth Control League, her purpose of this wasn't to serve women. Her purpose of this was to serve herself because she wanted to be promiscuous. And essentially, the beginning of the abortion lobby as a whole in our country is intricately tied to not only Planned Parenthood, but Margaret Sanger and others who were tied to this Marxist idea that human life is expendable, that we don't have souls, that we're anti-religious, that, you know, the family ought to be broken apart. And the way that the family can be broken apart is through, quote unquote, sexual liberation. But the only way for sexual liberation, quote unquote, again, sexual liberation to be successful is to have recourse when sex, as it is intended, creates a child. And that is birth control and abortion. So this idea that this Marxism that we're facing, you know, it manifests in critical race theory, it manifests in, you know, all kinds of different nasty things, AOC's Green New Deal. This cultural Marxism that we're facing in our country is tied to abortion, because in order for those public policies to be successful, the family unit, a married husband and wife with their children, has to be demolished. And the best way to do that is obviously to twist sex, to take it out of its proper context, and to make sure that those engaging in promiscuous sex, I guess, I don't know another term for it, don't quote unquote suffer the consequences of a child. And so abortion is necessary. So this, I think, is another reason that the abortion lobby is so has their heels dug in. They're so ingrained in this access from, you know, throughout the entirety of pregnancy, this dehumanizing of babies, this unwillingness to compromise, even in the face of the majority of American people disagreeing with their ideology on abortion. This is the reason why, because it's not just an abortion agenda. It's not just a profiting agenda. It is both of those things, but it's also a deeper Marxist agenda. And Marxists, man, they are committed to their ideology.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one of the reasons that we're so divided. I hear all the time people say, oh, well, you know, abortion is such a settled thing in our country. It's not settled. It is not a settled issue in our country. You know, the country is still so divided on abortion. And I tell people, don't let anyone ever say to you that this country that their opinion is settled on abortion, because it is not. We are still very divided on this issue. And I'm happy about that. I'm happy that we're divided. I'm happy that we're not a country like Australia, that is essentially just settled on the fact that they are a pro-abortion country. You know, I'm happy that this is still a topic that is still,
I don't even believe in that idea, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't believe in the idea of settled opinion. I think that live action does a really good job with this. So, and I've talked about this many times, so I don't want to repeat myself, but Steve Jacobs from the University of Chicago did that amazing research piece. It was his PhD thesis, actually, about what changes people's minds on abortion. I don't believe that people are so settled that at least generationally their minds can't be changed on this, especially when it's something that's objective truth, like life is. I don't believe that we can't change hearts and minds. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, and I don't think you'd be doing what you're doing either.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think there's just, I think that there's just so many people, I mean, they come on my page and they're like, this is a settled issue in our country. There's just no more discussion. There doesn't need to be any more discussion. I'm like, listen, half of the country is pro-life. Half of you are pro-abortion. I mean, there's still hearts and minds to be won, period. And I think that, you know, we're still, you know, I think that there's still absolutely an opportunity for this country to be an overwhelming majority of our, there's an opportunity for the overwhelming majority of this, of our country, of this culture to be pro-life. We just have to continue to talk about this. I think our young people are very moved by truth. And so we have to continue to talk about it, to continue to talk about truth, to continue to put truth in their face, because that's what they want to hear. That's what I find anyway, that young people want to hear truth.
Oh, certainly. It goes even beyond truth, I think, to reality.
You're listening to the Edify Podcast Network. We'll be right back. This podcast is part of the Edify Podcast Network. Edify is a faith-inspiring app that brings together thousands of the best Christian podcasts in one place for your listening enjoyment. Cut through the noise and grow your faith by diving into the world's top Christian podcasts today. Download the Edify app for free from the App Store or Google Play, or by going to edify.app. That's edifi.app. This is the Edify Podcast Network. Welcome back.
One of the other things I want to talk to you about is this whole, you know, vaccine issue, these vaccine passports. I think this is something that's obviously been in the news. You know, what are some of your thoughts on this today?
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right. When President Biden spoke the other night announcing this six-pronged approach, his new reinvention of his COVID policy, and he announced that there'd be a vaccine mandate for employers with over 100 employees. This is gonna, I think, impact something between 80 and 100 million Americans who are gonna be forced to choose between getting a vaccine that they don't want or losing their jobs. I thought his tone of voice, I mean, not only is this unconstitutional, which we can get into if you want the nitty gritty of that, it's obviously unconstitutional. It probably won't stand up in the courts, thank God. But perhaps even more importantly, the tone of President Biden's speech was the most vicious, mean, divisive tone towards the American people who have chosen not to get the vaccine that I have ever heard. I mean, throw out the window the idea that getting the vaccine is, you know, love your neighbor, do something nice for your neighbor. Biden literally was introducing a new idea of hate your neighbor if your neighbor has not done what we, the Biden administration, and Dr. Fauci and his ilk want you to do. I mean, it's so awful. It's so divisive. It's essentially trying to create a two-tier society, which, Abby, not to sound hyperbolic here, is strikingly similar to the Chinese Communist social credit score, where in China, if you are a Chinese citizen and you don't behave how the Communist Party wants you to behave, like a good little communist minion, you start having your so-called privileges revoked. You can't buy land. You can't travel on an airplane. You can't send your child to private school. You can't get a job. You are essentially ostracized from society unless you behave exactly how the Chinese Communist rulers want you to behave. That is what this vaccine passport is. That's what this mandate is. These people on the left are rulers, are public health officials. And I call them rulers specifically because they're acting like rulers. They're acting like they can simply dictate what you and I do or threaten our very inherent constitutionally protected rights, our liberty, if we do not comply. These folks want to ostracize people who don't get the vaccine. Now, the goalposts have been changed majorly on this issue. At the beginning of this pandemic, it was create a vaccine, get access to it so that anybody who wants it can get it, and then we'll brush our hands and call it a day. That was the goal. Make sure that people have the individual choice and the access to get the vaccine if they want it. The goalposts have now been moved to forcibly coercing people to get the vaccine under penalty of social ostracization. This is not something, Abby, that we the American people should tolerate, because not only in and of itself, is it horrendous? There are many valid reasons for people not to get the COVID vaccine, short-term effects, long-term effects, lack of data for are women on women's fertility, lack of data on the development of an unborn child. For young men, they're 6 times as likely to have myocarditis or pericarditis, that's the heart inflammation, than to be hospitalized with COVID. There's ethical issues about the development of the vaccine, the production of some of the vaccines with aborted children, aborted fetal cell lines, which is the fetus or the body parts of aborted babies. I mean, there's a million and one reasons not to get it if you don't want to. And we're being told by public health officials who are unelected and unaccountable to us as voters that we're not allowed to hold these beliefs. We're not allowed to say no to this. We're not allowed to recognize that, hey, we're low risk. So why would we get a vaccine if we so choose based on, as I said, any number of reasons why you choose not to? And that's my responsibility then to suffer the consequences, perhaps, or not, whatever, it's my life. But we're being told that this is simply not allowed, that if we don't follow their dictates, that we're going to be ostracized from society. And the point that I started making is we have to ask the question, where does this end? What is the limiting principle? Even outside how horrendous it is for this vaccine in this instance, what could the government, the federal government, or the administrative state for that matter, these unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats, what could they not force us to do under penalty of revoking our rights or so-called privileges to operate in society if we're not complying with their ideology? And if you stop and give that some thought, if you thoughtfully examine this question, and you will conclude that there actually is no limiting principle. All a bureaucrat would have to do is label something an emergency in order to justify taking away your rights and freedoms unless you comply with their ideology. There is no limiting principle on this. It becomes a very, very scary prospect of what's going to happen with our country if we, the American people, allow it to go forward in this way.
Well, and then you don't have a democracy anymore. I mean, that's really the truth. I mean,
right.
And that's sort of how, I mean, I don't really feel like we're living under a democracy right now. With the way things are going there. I saw an article today where I thought, oh my gosh, finally. It was on NBC News. It said New York hospital to pause delivering babies after staffers quit rather than get vaccine. And I thought, finally, people are standing up and saying, we're not going to do this. We are not going to be forced into getting this vaccine. And I mean, I'm like, look, if you want to get the vaccine, get the vaccine. I mean, I've been very public about how we're not getting the vaccine. Nobody in my family is getting the vaccine. And you know what? And we had COVID, and all 10 of us had COVID, and we all survived, and we were all totally fine, and we were back to normal after day 4 because we got treatment. That's another thing, is that if people want to get treatment now, unfortunately, they're hardly able to get treatment. The FDA has created all this fear-mongering around getting ivermectin, around getting hydroxychloroquine. So now, if people want to get treatment, it's very difficult for them to get treatment. And they've basically made it like, oh, well, the treatment doesn't work. You know, the ivermectin is ridiculous to take. You're not a farm animal. You don't need to take ivermectin, as if we're all going out to Tractor Supply and buying it. No, I got it from, you know, a pharmacy where I got human ivermectin. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're making us sound like a bunch of idiots for taking this medication for humans. But it's all this fear mongering. My friend got COVID the other day, and she got ivermectin prescribed by a doctor. She had to go to 4 different pharmacies before she could finally get it filled because the pharmacist wouldn't fill it for her. The 4th pharmacist would finally fill it. And I thought, you know, what is going on? I mean, she gets it prescribed by a doctor, and then the pharmacist is refusing it because the pharmacist says, well, there's nothing showing that ivermectin worked. And I'm like, have you not looked in all the journals across the country, across different countries that are showing that ivermectin is working? Just because the FDA is suppressing this information from us does not mean that it's not working in countries all across this world. But they are trying so hard. If you are not showing that you're getting well because of the vaccine, then you're not allowed to get well. in the United States. And that's just the bottom line. If you're not getting well the way that the government wants you to get well, then you're not able to get well. And that's not a democracy. And it's terrifying. It's terrifying right now because there are people that are dying. There are people in the hospitals right now that are dying, that are on vents, that are so sick that do not need to be that way. I mean, my friend who's a pharmacist is like, Abby, she's part of like the frontline coalition. She's like, Abby, nobody needed to die from this. Nobody needed to be on a vent. There was early treatment. All of this could have been prevented. She was like, but doctors send people home to die. They send people home to get worse. She's like, none of this had to happen, but all of this treatment was suppressed from the American public. And I mean, that is malpractice. That is negligence.
It's so horrendous. And this is also, I mean, it's mind-boggling that we've gotten to this point in our country, right? And I think it's really a wake-up call for the American voter to realize that if you keep giving away your rights, if you keep giving away your liberties, if you keep allowing government to grow, if you keep voting for these Democrats and these squishy Republicans, this is what's going to happen. And it's going to be worse because what you just described, a government dictating how an individual handles his or her health, that's what a socialized healthcare system is. We are right on the cusp in our country of the radical leftists convincing the American public that you want free healthcare, you'll have all the access you need and you won't have to pay for it if you just turn over the entire healthcare industry to these very same bureaucrats who are depriving you of treatments, your right to try these treatments, regardless of what the journals say, actually, your right to try these treatments. And these bureaucrats are telling you, no, this is what a socialized healthcare system will be. It won't be you. It won't be your doctor. It won't be you and your doctor making decisions about your own health. No, it will be Fauci's. It will be Burks. It will be Biden. It will be Dr. Jill Biden. It will be Kamala Harris. It will be Cuomo. It will be Newsom. It will be Gretchen Whitmer and all of their minions making decisions about your healthcare. You will face rationing. You will face denial of care. You will be sicker. You will end up, some people will end up dying because they don't get the care they need in the time that they need it. This, what you're describing, is America's first taste of socialized medicine. And if we allow this to happen in this particular case, we're that much closer to a system where this is every little bit about every bit of our health, and we shouldn't allow this. I mean, we, especially our generation, Abby, we're so privileged to live in a nation as prosperous as the United States. We've never been denied an opportunity to try to achieve something. And it's spoiled us in a sense. We don't have a firsthand tangible knowledge that we can feel and taste and smell of what actual oppression is, what actual denial of rights is. And so we're not as cautious about and not as protective with these rights. We don't hold them close to us, hold them dear to us in the way that we ought. And so we've gotten our country to this point because we've been a little bit incautious about allowing government to grow, whereas previous generations understood better what it meant when, you know, power-hungry bureaucrats were in charge of your lives. But it's now up to our mushy generation, I guess, to grow a spine and say, wait a second, we want our country to be what it used to be. We want our country to afford us the opportunity to make decisions for ourselves, to choose hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin or monoclonal antibodies or a vaccine based on our decisions, not based on what the government is forcing us to do. And if we let this opportunity go, I hate to sound fatalistic here. I hate to sound negative because I'm not. I think it can be done. But if we let this opportunity go, it's going to be very, very difficult to roll back the power that we've given to our government.
Well, and that's why I've said people have got to say no. People have got to stand up and say, I'm not doing it. Employers have got to stand up and say no. I don't, my organization, we only have 30 employees. But I'm like, if I ran an organization that had over 100 employees, I would say no. I mean, I would just say no, we're not doing this. I'm not forcing my employees. I mean, you can find me, you can tag, whatever. You can take away my nonprofit status. You can do whatever you want. But we're not doing it. I would not comply. People have got to stop complying to these mandates. That's the only way that this is that we're going to be able to take this back. And I was just so, you know, pleased when I read this article. You know, these federal employees have got to stop complying. They cannot force everybody. They cannot come after and tax everybody. I mean, if there was some sort of, I mean, people have got it. I mean, I don't mean to sound dramatic, but I mean, like, if there was some sort of revolution in our country where people said, we're not doing it anymore. And you can be pro-vaccine, but not be pro-mandate. And that's where a lot of people need to get. They need to be able to say, look, I'm for the vaccine, but I'm not for you mandating it on people. Because that's against who we are as Americans. And that's against who we are as people who are pro-liberty and pro-freedom. And so, you know, we need people in this country who are willing to rise up. We need healthcare workers who are willing to rise up and say, we're not doing it. We're not doing this anymore. And to fight back and to stand strong. And I'm seeing more and more of that, but we need to see it on a greater level.
Yeah, I mean, when you say revolution and rise up, it doesn't even have to be literal. All you have to do is take off your mask and, you know, quit your job if you're being forced to do this, or take a vaccine that you don't want. Or if you're an employer, all you have to do is say nope to forcing your employees. Or if you're in New York and you're a restaurant, just say, I'm not going to be the enforcer of the government. I mean, it's actually almost an easy revolution, if you will. It's a passive revolution, because all you have to do is just keep living your life like normal and not obey this government dictate. It's not like you have to do anything particularly active. And I wish people would. I wish they would comply. It's very disheartening to see. I was walking around the downtown where I live, and there's no mask mandate where I live, but there's so many people wearing masks outdoors as they're walking around, even in the absence of a mandate. So it's not even like, oh, well, they don't agree with it, but it's the law. Like, it's not the law. They're doing it just because they've been brainwashed, just because they're sheep, just because other people are doing it. And it's so disheartening to see. So we see examples of that, whereas those of us who are so strongly against the mandates, sometimes you can't see that in public because there's no way to simply hang a banner. But make no mistake, there's a lot of us. And all you have to do is say no. It will affect employers to the extent that it will have to be reversed if it's not reversed first in the court. So, I mean, I echo what you say. Just say no. Just don't comply. Just don't do it.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be anything like where we're, you know, on horseback and you know, swords ablazing or anything. It's simple. I mean, and it doesn't have to be something really dramatic, but I mean, we just don't have to comply. I went into a store the other day, and there was a, you know, we're not supposed to, there's no mask mandates here in Texas. But I went into a store, and this woman was like, oh, do you have a mask? And I said, no. And she said, oh, well, I can get you one. And I said, I'm not sick. And I said, are you sick? And she just looked at me and said, well, no. And I said, okay, well, then we're good. And I just like walked off and like kept shopping. And I just thought, well, I mean, that's all we have to do. It's just so simple. You know, I mean, it's just so simple. Like, I mean, I wasn't combative or like confrontational. I was just like, I mean, what are we doing here? Like, I'm not sick. You're not sick. Like, I don't need a mask. Do you need a mask? I mean, we're fine, right? So it doesn't have to be like this big thing where it's like this big viral video, right? It's just like,
and I actually don't advocate that it should be. I was at a festival, an outdoor festival, and they had these big white tents. So like the big wedding tents, it's still outdoors. It just has a covering over the top of it, right? And they had signs up that said masks, and this was not a government related thing. This was just a private industry thing. And they had signs that said masks required under the tents, which is just the most absurd, laughable thing. And I didn't wear one even when I went under the tent. I had my 7-month-old daughter in my arms, and she hates when I wear a mask. And because she's smarter than the entire public health conglomerate, she pulls it off my face. She looks at me strange. And I read an article, by the way, that children born during COVID are going to have 10 IQ points lower than expected because they haven't seen the nonverbal facial expressions of other people. And I thought, okay, it's unscientific, it's ridiculous, and I'm not going to subject my child to that because it scares her, it dehumanizes me, and it's clearly bad for her development. So I didn't wear the mask. We're outdoors, and it was dumb. And someone said something to me about it. They weren't rude, so I don't want to you know, name this person or, you know, call them out in any such way. But I just very calmly said, you know, no. The mask scares my baby, which it's true. And you know, oftentimes people don't have, I don't know if it's the courage or the proper comeback, but they don't push it again. I mean, they didn't push it again with me. I was just like, nope, the mask scares my baby. I'm not going to wear one. And that was it. And I didn't. And I was one of the only ones not. But listen, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And it really is just that easy. And most of the time, people won't press it. I think people have been scared because they have seen the viral videos. But like, most of the time, like, people won't, like, once you say, like, no, I'm not going to, like, most of the time, they're like, oh, okay. And they just sort of walk off and they leave you alone. Like, they won't say, I mean, it's that simple, guys. You don't have to be scared. Like, you don't, you know, I mean, it's not a big deal. So, anyway, so yeah, I mean, everybody, I just want to encourage you, don't be scared and stand up for your own rights. And, you don't have to comply. Don't comply. You don't have to. We're still living in America as Amen. Of right now. And, you don't have to do it. Just say no, right? That's what we were taught in school. Just say no.
Exactly. Don't be a sheep. Don't engage in groupthink. Think for yourself and have confidence.
That's right. That's right. So Liz, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Everybody, you should definitely tune in to Liz, watch Liz on the Liz Wheeler show. And are you going to like come out with some books? What's the deal?
Yes, by the way, thank you for the shout out. Everyone can find the show, LizWheelerShow.com, or you can find it wherever you listen to pods, Apple, Spotify, you name it, wherever you get your pods. If you could subscribe on those platforms, that would be great for the show too. Listen, we have a lot of exciting things in the pipeline. Nothing quite ready to announce quite yet, except the show. The show, as you know, we launched it in May, so we've spent the summer really honing in and making it the best that we can. And we've been so pleased, so excited with the outpouring of support and viewership in the first couple months. So I love hearing from everybody. I love all the encouragement. I love the feedback. So keep it coming. And thank you so much for watching and listening. Again, you can find all the information you need on LizWheelerShow.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Liz_Wheeler.
Thank you so much, Liz. Everybody go follow Liz, subscribe, listen to her show. She's amazing. You'll learn so much. And yeah, thanks. Thanks to everybody for listening to the show this week. And I'll be back in a few days with a commentary episode. And until then, be safe. Don't forget to talk about Jesus everywhere you go, and we will talk soon.
Thanks for listening to Politely Rude with Abby Johnson on the Edify Podcast Network. Tune in next time for another powerful exploration of life, politics, parenting, and tips for navigating the daily chaos. And for more faith-inspiring podcasts, download the Edify Podcast app on the Apple and Google Play stores or at edify.app.